We present The Sound of Football.
Defoe in good goal-scoring form.
With a little bit of help from the linesman, yeah.
Well, yeah, yes.
How offside was that? That was the second stupidly offside goal. That was the second goal in the week in which the player was actually standing in a different state, you know, when the ball was pushing.
He certainly had missed the last bus to an onside position, didn't he?
Yes.
Zamora's suddenly finding himself touted as a possible England player. What about that?
Briefly, I mean, is it just people getting carried away, you think?
Yes.
Yes.
He ain't getting on that plane.
Welcome to The Sound of Football, show 29. Welcome one and all. My name's Chris Oakley, and once again, it's my great pleasure to welcome aboard Terry DeFellin and Graham Sibley to this wonderful show of ours.
Hello.
Welcome, fellas. I know I've already said this before, but an interesting weekend of football to discuss, but I'm quite genuine about that. This weekend, we had all kinds of things going on. We had the League Cup final, then we had Premier League games going on and such like, and much incident going on right across the board where that's concerned. But we're going to start off with some breaking news, and that is that Neil Warnock has been appointed as the fifth manager of Queen's Park Rangers. We're going on air, so to speak, sort of Monday evening, Monday the 1st of March, so this would just come to light in the last, probably last hour or so, I suspect. And I guess we had to come to you first, Terry, as a Crystal Palace fan, and Warnock previously being Crystal Palace manager up until, say, about an hour ago, whatever it was. As soon as I saw it, I was staggered actually by the fact that Warnock could sort of leave Crystal Palace and go and join QPR when Crystal Palace are in obviously such a bad way with all the things going on in the background that have been announced the last month or two and so on. What do you feel about Neil Warnock? I mean, fine that he's going off and getting himself a new challenge perhaps at QPR, but what are your feelings about Warnock and indeed how he's going to leave Crystal Palace at this moment in time?
Well, I mean, I think he'll leave Crystal Palace in a pretty parlous and desperate situation. But given that we're in a fairly parlous and desperate situation anyway, I don't think that's going to change much. I think that Warnock's sort of contribution to the club has happened and has been done, and I personally think that he probably had done as much as he could, and
really?
Perhaps it would be best if he got off the payroll and moved on. I don't think that there's much of a chance of us staying in the division now that he's gone. I think that unless they can bring in a suitably inspirational manager to manage the squad, I think it's very unlikely that Palace will stay up. That they've been running out of steam. I think I mentioned this a couple of times before. They've been running out of steam over the last few weeks, and I think that kind of bounce, that post-administration bounce that Warnock instigated, was sort of like, you know, pretty much gone flat now, and so it's always going to be a difficult one. From Warnock's point of view, he's a professional. The lease on his house is up, and the club he works for is in administration. I mean, under normal circumstances, you know, you would expect somebody, if they got an offer from another company, to move on, and just because it's football, it doesn't mean that he should, yeah. One of the reasons why Palace and so many other clubs are in the problems that they have is because they don't look at football in the way that they look at any other business. They see it as different. And I think that it would be therefore hypocritical to be critical of Neil Warnock for just making a simple professional decision. And that's this. My company is in a serious state. I may lose my job. And I'm being offered another job, probably for more money. And to an extent with security. I mean, obviously, chances are, statistically, Neil Warnock will be out of the job before April. But at least he'll get paid off. And, you know,
he could be out of the job before he finishes podcast.
Conceivably, yes. He could conceivably already be sacked. He could be going for Leroy.
In which case, let's move on to the second
item. News, Neil Warnock's been sacked.
I guess it's just in an idealistic and maybe kind of a pretentious sort of way. Part of me just feels like you know, Crystal Palace are really need all the help they can get at the moment, so stick around. But I take your point completely, obviously, in reality and in all practicality, I guess he's sort of done what you'd expect someone to do.
I
wonder personally how much choice he had in the matter. I'm sure he was offered to him, but I think with the administrator actually failing to make sales in the transfer window that were expected, and I'm sure that's why they were Palace were forced into administration anyway, because the people that were owed money didn't think that the club were moving fast enough selling their key players to pay off the debts. Whether or not they've been told, well, look, we can't sell any more players now until the transfer window, but we can certainly sell our manager, and that's what in effect they've done, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. We managed to keep Klein and Dans, but we've lost our manager. I mean, we'll find out over the next few weeks and months just whether or not that was a good thing or not. Mm. I mean, couple that with the fact that obviously QPR wanted him and came to Palace with a firm offer. And I mean, he is probably the highest paid member of staff at the club at the moment. If he is your highest earner, then I guess they just probably thought, well, you know, the most important thing is to see the club through in one state or another through to the end of the season. And if it happens to be bottom of the league, well, it's just tough. And I guess to an extent it is. Speculation has already begun about a replacement, which is interesting, and it's all old names mostly. I mean, obviously Steve Coppell is never terribly far away from speculation about these things. Even Ian Dowie's name's being mentioned, but
who's in temporary charge, do we know?
An announcement's not been made about that, mate. Not well. I mean,
no, I don't think
it's literally worth. I mean, I'm looking at Twitter at the moment because the club made an announcement about half an hour, three quarters of an hour ago. So I'm kind of, I don't imagine that the administrator is the kind of person who's going to, you know, put down his evening glass of wine to appoint a new manager. I think he'll leave it till tomorrow to do it. It's not like club chairman who'll be rushing around looking to make an appointment within five minutes of it happening. It's just, it could easily just be a rather anonymous chap from the coaching staff who, you know, walks out there. Some guy called Les, maybe. I don't know.
As is often the way.
Well, like Les Reed just suddenly found himself in charge of Charlton, didn't he, for about five minutes.
I'm sure if they rake around Queen's Park Rangers bins, I'm sure there's probably a few managers there going
I mean, it's funny you should say that, Graham, but they've been raking around our bins long enough over the years, that club. One thing that sticks in the craw is that it is QPR, and I really do loathe that football club. So, I mean, I won't say any more because I don't want to upset QPR fans, but, you know, I mean, last time we played QPR, half their team was our 2005 squad. You know, I don't know. Let's not, shall we?
Given QPR's position, they'd say you're probably better off without them, aren't you?
Well, I mean, if we could find a club, I'll tell you what, if we could find a consortium of local businessmen who could buy the club and then just try and manage the club sensibly, I will take 10 years of League One football than 6 months of Queen's Park Rangers.
Yeah,
I'll take that happily, because at least I know I've got a club, you know. At least I know I've got a football club, and I've got a club that's got some kind of respect for its community and its supporters. That's, I think, what anybody are at the level that Palace operate. I think that's everyone should learn. We do have to reconcile ourselves to the fact that, you know, we are a lower league football club, Championship level. I mean, maybe now after all this trauma, maybe League One level for a little while, and the days of, we should finally forget that you know, the those two or three seasons we had at the very, very top of the tree were only just that, two or three seasons, and in fact we are actually quite a small, modest club, and we should probably run ourselves like that, and then maybe we might, you know, have some happy times.
Exactly. The occasional spike.
Yeah, your cup run, maybe. I mean, if we get in the Championship, stay in the Championship, make the odd foray into the Premier League, and, you know, I mean, that's not a bad life. I'd rather be that than someone like Blackburn. I just end up in purgatory in the middle of the Premier League, you know, just wandering around all these goodies, not being able to touch any of them. Rubbish. Anyway, shall we move on?
Well, anyway, yes, no, as it is, Neil Warnock's last game was against Doncaster at the weekend, a 1-1 draw, and Crystal Palace now 21st in the table. That's one above the relegation zone. And as a QPR, just one place above them in the table. So I believe that's now 12 managers in 4 years for QPR. So well done to them. They're breaking records of some sort, one way or the other. Anyway, that's the breaking news dealt with. Going back to the weekend, in the Premier League at least, there were all kinds of amazing results and incidents and things going off left, right and centre. Possibly the key game of the weekend was the match between Manchester City and John Terry. Listen to me, I'm already getting ahead of myself. You can tell what's coming up, can't you? Manchester City and Chelsea, rather, at Stamford Bridge, which remarkably finished as a 4-2 win for Manchester City. What was it? The statistic was being bandied around.
Oh, they hadn't scored for about 5 minutes or something at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah, first win at Stamford Bridge for 10 years, was it? Or first time they've scored at Stamford Bridge for 10 years, and now all of this. So a great result for Man City, just as we were writing off Mancini and his coaching methods and whatnot. Of course, the first thing that we had to get out of the way was the compulsory handshake, which wasn't. Yes, fine, okay, got that out of the way. But Graham, I mean, Chelsea just sort of imploded, didn't they, really? I mean, once they sort of went behind and we saw the Man City's mettle on the day, they just collapsed and all kinds of shenanigans, two people being sent off and whatever.
Yeah,
did you see the game? What did you make
of it?
Really
was just a game of two halves, wasn't it? Because in the first half, Man City were largely shambolic. And in the second half, it completely switched around. It was like, you know, the teams didn't switch ends, they just switched shirts. It really was. I mean, like I don't know, maybe there was some like bad karma at one end of the pitch or something, but it just seemed to go completely bonkers. I mean, they got their equaliser just before half time, thanks to some rather comic defending and goalkeeping at the back there. And I think that's what happened. I think after that first goal, it just seemed to take all the confidence out of the centre backs and goalkeeper, and I think you could see it like the defence just got really desperate.
Hilario was just awful, and I in my playing days, not that I ever reached any particular standard with him, but I've played in goal on many an occasion in the past, and so I therefore have a bit of a sympathy with goalkeepers whenever you see games on TV. But I have to say, Hilario was just, I thought he was absolutely awful. I just don't know what that was all about.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, you know, I mean, like, thankfully he had Peter Enkelman this weekend to go at the top of the blooper reel, but. He was a very close second, wasn't he, really?
John Terry again, seemingly a fault on one or two occasions of misjudging stuff, and certainly on the Tevez goal, I think he was getting sort of getting himself confused. Belletti, I think, sort of interfering with him in terms of trying to defend Tevez and so on. It was very un-Chelsea-like.
Yeah, well, it looked like it was the first time they actually played together. That
well, yeah, no, that's it in a nutshell, really. Yes, absolutely. You'd perhaps have expected better from Chelsea's defence.
I must admit, though, that Man City do look a different team when they've got Tevez playing for them.
I was surprised he was playing, given the fact that he'd only just got back from Argentina, where his wife had given birth prematurely to a baby and so on. So I thought he'll probably be jet-lagged and God knows what else, but, you know, full credit to him. They do have the extra edge, don't they?
I think it's interesting. I think he looks more like the sort of player he was when he was at West Ham than he does when the sort of player he was when he was at Man United. I think he's got that. I think probably because, like, you know, the forward line is pretty much his now, and he's in the and basically everyone is feeding him. So I think that gives him the sort of play that he wants, and you know, he's positively thriving there at the moment.
Well, just for sheer industry, I always rated him when he was at West Ham. He just seemed to do so much and get involved in so much. And I mean, yes, he has his sort of games where he doesn't sort of figure quite so much as he did.
I think you've got to just look at the goal at Old Trafford, really, haven't you? Just for just to sum up the sort of player he can be. So,
yeah. And we had Bellamy also got two in that match as well. So
yes, and of course he got
scored some goals as well.
So which is brilliant. I mean, as I said in the previews today, you know things are going bad for you when Craig Bellamy starts scoring points off against you.
That's right. Oh dear, but Chelsea just went to pot and they end up. I think Michael Ballack was sent off, and who else was sent off?
It was Belletti, wasn't it? He was sent off for a professional foul, wasn't he?
So all of a sudden, title race opens up again. And what did they have? They got, was it like a 1 point? Is it 1 point lead at the top?
Yeah, one point lead over Man United. Are they going to be able to field any fullbacks at all in the next game?
I'm starting to doubt it, I have to admit.
Maybe they should ask for Wayne Bridge on loan.
I'm sure the fans will be welcoming him back with open arms.
Well, it was interesting because at first Wayne Bridge got the bird from the fans, but their enthusiasm for that just seemed to taper off after a while. And in fact, the most of the noise seemed to be genuine applause for him when he was substituted. I think there still is quite a strong, despite the whole Team Terry at the Bridge. There is perhaps a degree of sympathy, I think, for Wayne Bridge's position, if I can use that word, in this context. But also perhaps aided by the fact that John Terry had another poor game, and so affections and allegiances to players regarding off the field matters are often influenced by what happens on the field. So, as long as it's, brave John Terry, he's our man, he's our, Mr. Captain Invincible at the back there, then they'll defend him to the hilt. But, if he shows signs of weakness on the pitch, then perhaps they're looking at it and going, and then that means they have to start thinking about moral issues, and we can't have that.
He was no better in the second half. For that fourth goal, all right, there were a couple of goals down anyway, but... I mean, Sean Wright Phillips didn't even break out of the jog.
No, they were punchy by that point, didn't they? They looked they'd had a real hiding. A significant moment for me was when Tevez, took umbrage for some reason and squared up to Terry.
Yeah. That's right. There was a little bit of tugging of shirts or something like that, wasn't it?
Which is a bit, kind of weak, frankly. But it was his moment, and Terry's expression was a kind of look, just get off my back, man, in a kind of, I don't really need this kind of stuff. And, even 3 or 4 months ago, John Terry would have been not in any way conciliatory at all. He would have probably grabbed him by the throat, lifted him up and said, look, sonny, I'm in charge here, and sent him packing, it would have been an entirely different altercation. And you do feel that perhaps John Terry's having a really bad time, I think. I mean, probably completely deservedly so, but it does look like all his chickens are coming home, doesn't it?
On Match of the Day, they seem to feel that yes, it must surely be having an effect on him now, after he got his one good game out of the way directly after this whole sort of story broke. They reckon, they were sort of saying that every game since he's been sort of, culpable for various things going wrong in the Chelsea defence. So, yeah, and I'm sure it must be.
What he needs is for the season to end and then for him to pack himself off to Australia, to South Africa with the rest of the England squad, and just get himself locked away and let Fabio Capello work his mojo on him and get him into some kind of shape. I mean, I just think that that's probably what he needs. I mean, which is just as well, because the World Cup is at the end of the season. And, if he can just muddle through then hopefully he'll be able to get his head straight back together, so at least he can try and do some kind of job for England. But the guys are clearly struggling at the moment.
But I think Man City were falling away, and they suddenly pulled the result out of the bag. They're now they're fifth in the table. They've still got a game in hand. They could actually go fourth if they were to win that above Tottenham. So well done to them. Elsewhere, Arsenal were playing Stoke, and carrying on the theme of things or teams or whatever being written off. I think many of us, perhaps even you yourself, Graham, were doubting whether Arsenal could have any success against Stoke, given recent form.
Only last week, in fact.
Sorry?
Only last week, in fact, Graham was writing off Arsenal's. Yeah.
Yes, you can't say we're not topical on this programme. As it is, Arsenal were very professional to right to the last. It took a while for Arsenal to break down Stoke, didn't it? But having done so, did the job well. Sadly, at the expense of losing Aaron Ramsey, who had a broken ankle at the end of the towards the end of the game through a tackle by Ryan Shawcross, nasty one. I mean, Graham, where do we stand on it? I mean, sort of good result for Arsenal. That goes without saying. But there was all this hoo-ha about the tackle, the Shawcross tackle. Tony Pulis was a very defensive of his players, saying he's not that kind of player. But Wenger, perhaps wrapped up a little bit in emotion, was pretty much sort of saying not only that was a sort of unforgivable. I'm not quite sure what the quote was, but he was saying it was unforgivable. But also suggesting that perhaps there's a vendetta going on where all the other Premier League clubs are going out to butcher the Arsenal squad. What do you make of all that?
Well, it's not the first time he said that, and I don't think he actually. I mean, it was very weird because this was in the immediate post match. Interview. Yes. So this was like less than half an
hour.
That's
what I was like. You had to sort of temper that with the fact that he was caught up in the whole thing.
But I think even though if the what he said was in the heat of the moment, I don't think he would he would go against anything he said at that point. I think he honestly believes that the English game is in some ways wrong. And the fact that that hard, uncompromising defenders are perhaps seen as a good thing in the game. The fact that they G up the crowd. They're part of football. That's what it is. I mean, I think that's what he's trying to say is the fact that this isn't part of football. This is a very, very parochial, small-minded part of football. And it was interesting to read some commentators today, some with a more Arsenal bent, to say, well, look, this is the reason why England is never going to be a force in the world. Because at the grassroots level, we're not talking about at the top level, we're talking at the grassroots level, this is what football's all about.
Yep.
From junior football upwards, you see it.
Getting stuck in.
Yeah, and that happens at kids level. You can go down the park and see 12-year-olds play football, but the 12-year-olds look like 14-year-olds for the successful teams because they just have the biggest kids. The biggest ones there, not the nippy little ones with the skill. No, that's not good enough. You want ones that are big, but that permeates through the whole thing. This whole thing about there was no malice in that tackle. Ryan Shawcross must weigh the best part of 15, 16 stone. When he's running full pelt and he kicks someone, he's going to break something.
Yeah,
his foot was halfway up Aaron Ramsey's shin. And he probably wasn't meaning to kick him.
No, I don't think he was.
No, so no,
but
no.
The thing is, if you take both feet off the ground, all right, he only led with one foot, but he swung that foot around and he kicked Aaron Ramsey in the shin and broke both bones in his shin.
Him out for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
It was really similar. It was similar to Taylor's tackle on Eduardo. It was one of those. I mean, I was thinking back to a few weeks ago, the Merseyside derby, which was replete with really vicious raking challenges that were designed to cause pain, and to probably to an extent, just mix things up a bit and make statements and in the heat of battle. The Shawcross challenge was a genuine attempt to get the ball. It was just a genuinely clumsy attempt to get the ball with horrific consequences.
Yeah.
It wasn't an attempt. I mean, if he'd wanted to hurt Ramsey, he'd have raked his studs down the back of his calves, and he would have fallen over. He might have even had to have gone off injured and been out for a couple of weeks, but he wouldn't have it wasn't a career threatener. This was a. I think this is what happens with teams that go away from home and play a high possession game like Arsenal. Chelsea are like it as well. Manchester United, all the top sides are like it. They go away
and
from
especially
home.
Especially somewhere like Stoke, where you know if a team puts three or four passes together, the crowd are booing.
They want
right on top of it.
Tony Pulis said before the game that he expected Arsenal to have a great deal of possession. As it happens, you know, they didn't string as many passes together as, say, Chelsea did when they went up there a little while ago. Nothing like it, in fact, oddly enough. And the other interesting statistic that came out of that game was that Arsenal were much stronger and much quicker in the tackle. They won much more tackles than Stoke did. Obviously Stoke were down to 10 men at one point, so perhaps that's reflected in that. But you know, Arsenal were more physical in that they passed the ball around, but they dominated the game, basically, and that's borne out by the fact that they've won it. But Tony Pulis knew that this was going to be happening, and I mean, what I would be really interested in seeing would be in having a look at the scouting reports that they get back on Arsenal, that these clubs get back. Mm-hmm. This would perhaps get some kind of insight as to the perception that there is Arsenal sort of like, not singled out, but are Arsenal regarded as a team that wilt under extreme physical pressure?
I think there are two ways of looking at it, though. I mean, in the two games that Arsenal played against Chelsea, they were out-muscled.
Yes, but that's not the same thing.
They were outplayed, and they were deservedly beaten.
Yeah, but that's not the same thing, though, is it?
No,
that's
it's
just
not.
Two,
no,
that's just
entirely
that's just
different.
One team bigger
you
than
you
the other.
You can have
yeah.
a physical game against Arsenal without yeah. having to kick them up in the air.
No, so you could just
thing
worry
is,
them out
sorry to interrupt. One thing I found in that game is that the minute an Arsenal player got the ball, that Stoke were putting like two, sometimes even three men on the Arsenal player just to harry them into the... And so, consequently, for a lot of the game, Arsenal were really struggling to string a couple of passes together. And that's kind of the way that Stoke, I think, certainly play the game against the bigger teams, if not all teams, that they just sort of push and harry the whole time. So it was difficult for Arsenal, I think, in that game.
Well, I do agree. I mean, I agree with Graham. I do think, and I've always... I mean, I've held the view for many years that if we're going to genuinely mature... As an international football culture, we probably do need to maybe send our younger players to different academies overseas where they have a different culture there. Because yes, I mean English schools football is dominated by larger kids, and it's going to be that way.
It gets more when you think that. Everyone's saying, it was just a clumsy challenge from Shawcross. The guy's sort of 22, he's broken two players' legs now, and he almost broke Adebayor's last season.
Yeah. And he's considered sufficiently advanced as a player to be picked for the England squad.
Exactly, Stoke could put a price tag of 20 million on him for this clumsy player.
Yeah,
I mean, they need to be more refined than that.
Yeah, it's no wonder they're defending him though when they know that he's going to be the target of transfer gossip in the summer. What they don't want him to be is someone who is going to be constantly looked at by referees and think, no, you're just a clogger.
Yeah, but he will be though. I mean, I think it will be extremely unlikely that Shawcross will ever achieve what he was destined to achieve. I mean, if Capello had planned to pick the squad 24 hours after that game, I'm sure Shawcross would have been left out.
Mm.
Yeah, and I don't imagine that he'll be seen again. I mean, he'll probably just end up disappearing. I mean, he has a higher profile than Martin Taylor did, but I can't see him really. I mean, I think that's basically it for him. I think there's the possibility that Aaron Ramsey will probably, with the miracle of modern medicine, will probably recover.
I doubt very strongly.
But I doubt very much that Shawcross will. I thought he'll carve out a living at some point throughout his career, and you'd have to say on the basis of this that he probably doesn't really deserve his billing. Preventing something like this is. From happening again is always the slightly worrying thing. I mean, I know the clock on the wall is beating us, but there is an issue in terms of you know, where do we go? How do we stop these things from happening again? And can we? And you know, and perhaps we, there does need to be a broader sort of root and branch examination about the way that we play football in this country. Or do we just simply say, well, it's just one of those things, and then just move on? Which I guess is probably what will actually happen.
Yeah. Well, on that point, which is a nice sort of seed for a future conversation, I suspect, we must leave it. We haven't had any time to talk about the League Cup final and to give hearty congratulations to Manchester United for beating Aston Villa. Suffice to say, it was a better final than last year, one where we were trying to live blog last year on Twitter, which had all kinds of hilarious consequences. But anyway, there we go. I suspect that's where we have to end our chat for this week's podcast. Needless to say, you can catch up on all our latest podcasts, in fact, probably all our podcasts, really, on our Sound of Football blog site. That's soundoffootball.blogspot.com. Do drop us an email if you so care to do so, sofpodcast@googlemail.com. You can catch us on our Facebook fan page. You can drop us a line on Twitter. All the information's there on the web. Just go and search for it. I'm sure we can trust you to do that suitably well. But for this week's podcast, thank you very much indeed for listening. Hope you can join us again next week. But for now, from myself and from Terry and from Graham, it's a fond farewell. Goodbye.
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 And now it's time for Soccer Yens.
Hello. I do not see what the big deal with Six Music is. Just move Adam and Joe to Radio 2 and close it down. Kein Problem. Goodbye.
Tune in next week for another exciting episode of Soccer Yens.